Hola mi gente, my name is Jessica Yáñez and I want you to join me for some Wine and Chisme. The Wine and Chisme podcast was created to amplify voices across communities of color, all while drinking a glass of wine. From wine talk, interviews, and recaps of all things pop culture, join me every Wednesday for the Chisme. Please make sure to check out the Wine and Chisme podcast and other amazing podcasts as part of the Latina Podcasters Network.
Hola, hola, mi gente. It's your girl, Odalis Jasmine, and y'all are listening to Hella Latino. Y'all know this is a space where we talk about all things first gen, where we celebrate Latinidad, and where we highlight our beautiful, dope community. And today I'm talking to Lex Borrero, someone I feel like everybody should know about. If you like reggaeton, música urbana, good music overall, he is the Latino entertainment executive and mastermind behind some of music's biggest producers, like Thainy, with whom he co-founded Neon 16 in 2019. He is known for bringing out Latin stories, talent, brands, and culture to the global stage. And whether it's in music or documentaries like the Montaneds, he is all about putting our Latinos on. In this episode, we talk music, we talk about his story, and we talk about something that I like to call a special love letter to J Balvin. More chisme in this episode. Que lo disfruten. Well, welcome, Lex. I have so many questions for you, but I really wanted to ground us first in what this space is. And it's really about representing Latinidad and what it really looks like. I feel like people look at Latinos and they feel like we all speak a type of way, live a certain life. And I think that we have so much more to tell, so many stories to tell. And I love how you're doing it through music and representing our community. So I'm excited to get into it. But yeah, just wanted to welcome you into this space first.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about our culture. Excited to be here today. You know, it's great. Life is good.
Life is good. I start every episode with the first question, and that's, how do you identify and why? And Lex, I'm telling you, I've had over 100 guests and no one has answered this question the same, and just shows like how identity kind of just evolves with us and what all the different places we come from, right? But how do you identify and why?
How do I identify myself, culturally or personally?
De todo, or both? Culturally. De todo.
Well, culturally, you know, I would say I'm Colombian. I'm Colombian German. My father is German, but I am Colombian in the root and the love, and my patriotism is tied into being Colombian. And I think that's made a huge part of everything I am, right? I've been blessed that I was born to a mother who's a pastor and a father who's a life coach. So I think in my life, intuitivity and my intention has always been led to, being of service, being here for the people. Mm-hmm. And that's really where I get my joy and I get all my creativity from. So, but yes, I am Colombian, you know, I love to be Latino, even though I would say that it's very interesting how you come to the U.S. and, you lose a sense of that part of you, right? Because I started speaking English, my Spanish got really bad. And so I see how the New York Puerto Ricans must feel when they, you know, they understand Spanish, but they can't speak. I have a lot of friends that feel like that. And I feel like that now about being Colombian. Like, my accent depends who I'm hanging out with. So I'm hanging out with my Mexican friends, you know, I go a little Mexican on it. They go a little Venezuelans, I go Venezuelan on it. If I go Colombian, I go Paisa. If I hang out with Puerto Ricans, which is, you know, 98% of the people I hang out with, then, you know, you get the little Puerto Rican swag in there. So I think most people, when they hear me talk, they can't identify where I'm from, but Colombia. Proud.
I feel like sometimes we, for those who do live in the U.S. or are born, grew up here, there's almost like this pan-Latino experience, right? It's like you are a little bit of all these different cultures and it's who you're surrounded by. And I want to talk a little bit about how you grew up, Lex. Like, let's bring it back to grew up in a pastor's home. Weren't you at one point going to be a youth pastor? Right. Or were you? Talk to me about like that childhood and then how you got from growing up in this Christian world and then now going into the music world, into the urban Latin scene.
So I grew up in Colombia until I was 7 years old. At the time, my mom was not a pastor. You know, she was a businesswoman and political figure. My father was a businessman and a race car driver. My mom came here. I came here when I was seven. And then my transition into the American life started then, right? Like not knowing, taking ESOL classes and trying to, you know, define where we were. Also to the shift in culture overall, because I came from living in Colombia where we had, you know, a maid and a chauffeur and we're upper middle class family to coming to the US and all living in a small apartment, starting from zero. You know, my mom started to fry food and sell it at the airports. It's how we would make money. My father was not here. So now it's, you know, not this united family. But my mom found Christ in the process and, you know, really quickly became super involved in the church. And so did the rest of my immediate family, my sister. And that led me to be, to grow in church, grow being a youth pastor, really always loved the concept of being a leader and being able to guide people. And for me, that has really been the focus of everything I do. I always say that I'm an architect of dreams, and that comes from the fact that I wanted to be an architect. I never grew up wanting to be a musician or wanting to be in music. I loved the influence and the impact that someone like Michael Jackson had at the time, or, you know, I always say the two MJs, Michael Jordan, how they, you know, moved crowds and their brand and their concept and how next level everything that they did was. So I was attracted to that part of entertainment. But I just love the concept of building and love the concept of helping people. And so that really started my journey. And the transition to music, you know, started in high school with trying to find a way to make money to buy a pair of Jordans. And I saw a kid in school that rapped. And so, you know, we did a song together and sold that to our classmates, which I've spoken about in a bunch of different places. But really the full transition happened because coming from church, I had seen all these incredible artists that are Christian, like Lecrae and all these other rappers at the time who were really amazing, but they were so preachy that like I couldn't show that music to any of my friends. It was like embarrassing, you know? So I created a company called Crossover Entertainment because I wanted to figure out a way to do positive music without it being so preachy so that you can reach a different audience. And that's where the first journey started of like, okay, music has this process. And one thing led to the next. I ended up in an internship in New York City. And that internship, you know, led to me starting my career as a music producer. And really, I spent the majority of my career in the Anglo business. And so it wasn't until I came to Miami 4 years ago that I really got an opportunity to see what was happening in Latin music, understand the place that it was at, and most importantly, the opportunity. I felt that as a business, one, it was very young, so it was still like a place where writers and producers were not given their respect, where the industry was a little bit messy. It had the Latino component on it, which is always, there was something under the table, always something, you know, everybody's always trying to do something to get more money. And it was all about money. And one of the things that I understood seeing hip hop become hip hop over the 20 years of my career was the power of brand, the power of being a narrator, a curator of culture. And so I saw that as the opportunity in Latin. And then I knew that if, you know, I saw what Balvin was doing, because for whatever people want to say, J Balvin really was the one that changed them. He changed the styling. He changed the press and the media that you were a part of. He changed our acceptance as a Latin culture to high level art, like Murakami and Cause. He started to introduce American pop culture to the Latino world, especially the music world, in a way that nobody else had done to that moment. And I knew that if he would continue and someone would follow with an urban sensibility, because Balvin was urban, but he was more Colombian pop urban, you needed someone like a Bunny. If that would follow, this thing would explode. And so I put a bet on that, and we created Neon 16, and the bet paid off, and obviously that has now transitioned into our film and television studio, our agency, and other businesses. But it's been quite a journey, 21 years to come back to Miami. When I moved from Miami at 16, I was like, I'm never going back to there. And here I am. You know, life has a way of showing you that you don't get to decide. And I've had the most success, I would say, not so much financially, but the most success from a public eye in Latin music. So who would have thought?
Was there a sense of like, I want to go into Latin music because of your roots? Or did you see like an opportunity to amplify the voices? Like what part of it was personal to you when breaking into the Latin space?
Definitely amplify the voices, change the narrative, right? Again, my drive has never been money. It has never been personal achievements. It has always been, how can I create something that changes the narrative and the perception of something so that, you know, a new creation can happen? And that's when you hear people, oh, we're going to impact culture. That's what impact means. Impact is you got to change the narrative and you got to change the perception. Because then you change the matter, then you impact the matter, right? And so for me, it was this opportunity to take this business that was steadily growing, but it was still in their baby stages, while most importantly, taking the opportunity to help a human being called Tiny become this high-level artist, and in the process, change the way people looked at producer-songwriters. That was the drive. And then the rest of the pieces came by my level of expertise in building business and building brand. And so things started to piece together and do it. But at the core, it was always about truly being the transition point and impacting culture. And that's why we really started to get a lot of buzz around Neon, not by the success of Tiny, but really by the change that we were doing in Latin music. Like we were changing the way people looked at producers. We were changing how people looked at industry events. We started doing e-gaming events with major celebrity, all these other things that people, none of the other companies in Latin were ever paying attention. All of a sudden, every industry person is going to our events and saying, wow, this is the coolest brand. By changing the aesthetic of the music videos and creating, you know, the Club 16 and the kids that grew up from reggaeton and like really putting new artists into the transition, having Kali Uchi become successful, doing Selena Gomez, doing SpongeBob soundtrack when no one was doing soundtracks. Like, we were lifting our culture by changing the narrative and perception of how people looked at us, including the Anglo market, right? The general market. People started to say, oh, you guys are actually really cool. Tiny's really cool. Neon is really cool. And that's really where the success came from.
And you're like, we've been here. We've been cool.
Yeah. But you know what's interesting? I think as a culture, sometimes we forget how to storytell. And so you can have the coolest product in the world. If you don't know how to tell the story of it, no one cares. And so for a long time, I feel that Latin music, historically, yes, we were cultural. We had the beauty. We had the sounds. The music didn't change. The music, it's not like the music evolved so much that it's like, that's why we're popping. No. We were doing reggaeton. The difference, and we were doing salsa, and we were doing merengue, we were doing vallenato. The difference is the presentation is different. Balvin changed the way our presentation was so that people could now say, oh, wait, to your point, they are cool. They're not the corny guys wearing their polo shirts inside and Ferragamo slippers. They're into hip-hop, and they're into sneakers, and they're into art, and they're into fashion, and they're into all the things that I'm into as an American kid. So now I can relate to them, even though I don't understand what they're saying. And now we change. And then we change from being, you know, historically, Latin music was very genre driven. So you had Marc Anthony and salsa, Carlos Vives and vallenato, you know, Juan Luis Guerra over here, you know, Romeo Santos. So, but you would listen to these artists because they were the face of the genre, not because you wanted to dress like them. You never heard somebody say, I want to dress like Juan Luis Guerra. You've never heard, oh, I want to dress like Carlos Vives. What? Never. Balvin was the first person you're like, oh, I want to dress like Balvin. Because Balvin started to follow the trends Kanye was setting and implemented that into that. So before that, there wasn't like people wanting to dress like Daddy Yankee. Like Daddy Yankee was dressing like the hip hop artists in the US. And so that transition, that change in how the presentation of our artists happened and our brands is what created the breakthrough that you see today.
Yeah. And what do you think, like, what has been, in your opinion, because I think Latin music has had such a journey, like in general in the U.S. and whether it started with, Tito Puente, or it started with then Selena kind of crossing over, like there's so much that has happened in the music scene. From your opinion, what are some of like those artists that you think had to run before others could walk?
I mean, it's funny enough, but because I don't think Balvin is giving as much credit as he should, because he got, you know, maybe oversaw by the success of other artists. But I think
Balvin, he's dope. He really did break a lot of barriers.
I think Balvin is the reason, you know. Mm. He was part of a movement of transition between, you know, Despacito having his moment and other things that helped the narrative. But he was the driving force, in my opinion. He was the one. I mean, you listen to Vibras, that album, production-wise, I had never heard something like that. And not to take away all the foundation that the Yankee and Wisin Yandel and all the big reggaeton artists had done, because without them, there will be no Balvin. But Balvin changed the narrative. He really impacted the culture. And when you look back at, you know, even his collaboration with Bunny early on, his collaboration with Rosalia early on, like, he put a lot of artists on at a moment where they were not what he is. And I think in a lot of ways, his opportunity to live in the U.S. and want to engage with the high-level art is what allowed that to really happen. You know, he was the first that I could remember that was the first Latin urban artist that was a part of Paper Magazine, for example, such a cultural magazine. And those things, I think, are driven. We're the first one that really did a collaboration with Kaz or Ben Baller or Murakami, which, you know, that's what made Pharrell Pharrell. That's what made Kanye Kanye. That's really just, he just followed in their footsteps and did it for our culture. And so I think he was the driving force. And then obviously, you know, Bunny and his creative and his level of music and taste level, like, just exploded it to a whole nother level. And now you're seeing it with Regional Mexican, Peso, and everybody else. And so I think now music has no boundaries. I think it's really just there's an audience willing to listen to great Latin music from great artists.
Yeah. And, you know, to your point about like Latinos and stories, I think it's so much deeper, because I think innately Latinos are storytellers. Like, if you look at our ancestors, where we come from, like, we are just natural storytellers. But where I think it gets blurry is that sometimes we're too humble and we don't want to like tell our story in a bigger audience or in a bigger space. Like, we're always like, you know, gracias a Dios, si Dios quiere. Like, it's always like I'm gonna just put it in the back burner, or I'm just not gonna give it too much attention. But I think living out your authenticity and truth out loud, like J Balvin, I think that's what makes the difference, is that you want to follow people who are just unapologetically themselves, you know? And I think that's what J Balvin, Bad Bunny, I mean, all these Karol G, like all the people you see now, they just live out their truth and their story so unapologetically, loudly. And I think it encourages the culture. Like, we are dope. We need to start sharing our voices, telling our stories, sharing our work. Like, you know, like, don't mess around with the modesty anymore. Like, we need to be loud about who we are. Would you agree?
For sure. I mean, I think it's a cultural thing, right? It's a religious thing. Like, And I think it starts from the concept that we're taught to fear God, which is very different than, you know, for example, Judaism. And it's the reason why I think they, you know, my family is also Jewish. It's just, it's the difference between fear and respect, right?
Yeah.
And so without getting too much into religion, I think that's the thing, like the respect value that culture has is not a fear value. It's I respect. And because I respect, I also know who I am. And because I know who I am, everything is mine. We're taught, don't do this, don't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, God's going to punish you. God's going to do this. So you fear the potential of you being egotistic by saying something. And that fear holds you back from looking at the world and saying, hey, the world is mine. Right? Like, if I'm a son or a daughter of God, the world is mine. And I think culturally that, entwined with the fact that, unlike other, you know, like, if just look at you as Latinos, right? I talk about this all the time. It's very different to speak to a Black community whose experience is very similar to say, speak to a Latino community, because we're not a race, we're a culture. There's every mm-hmm. race in our culture. And there's, you know, 12 different countries, there's whatever amount of countries there is in Latin America, with all different things. We all have nuances that tie us together, but different ways of saying the same words, different ways of different kind of foods. And so all those kind of things also create another barrier where you feel like, great, you know, if I'm Venezuelan, and I see it happen here, Venezuelan and Colombians, we're very like huggy and loving and this and that, or even Puerto Ricans are very standoffish. So I've seen like the engagement between my Venezuelan staff and, for example, Puerto Rican staff. And while the Venezuelans are used to getting hugs, the Puerto Ricans are like, hi. And then they feel like, oh, do they not like me? But no, it's just culturally, that's the difference, you know, like,
yeah.
And so there's a lot of these that stops people from saying, okay, I'm going to be proud. I'm going to say what I do, and I'm going to unite the community. And I think, to your point, that's what we need to do. I think we need to understand that we are, even though we come from different places, we are all Latinos. And together we have an opportunity to change the narrative and change the perception of our culture in the world, especially in the U.S., right? Especially how they look at our content, at our music, at our creations, at our art. Like, there is a way to change that. And you have to do that way. One, to your point, being fearless and saying, hey, I deserve everything that everybody else has. I am as good, as talented, as creative, as amazing. And two, we got to build community. We got to unite. You know, we got to bring things and not also click up, not only hang out with Venezuelans or Puerto Ricans or Mexicans or Argentinians. No, like, let's all really build community and say we're one voice. And if we're one voice in our thought, in our process, in our creations, and in how we support things, you're going to see the overall culture just move forward.
Yeah. You know, it's been like, and I'm sure you feel this too, it's been such a wild journey to watch Latinos on the come up, because growing up, I felt like we were so different than anyone else. Like, especially growing up in the U.S., like, you're not white, you're not black, and you're just kind of in this middle place, and you feel like you don't quite belong in either world. And it's funny, because I had someone on this podcast say it wasn't always cool to be Latino, because there was a shift. And I remember the shift where, like, people started posting on TikTok, like, everybody thinks I'm Latina, or everyone wants a Latina girlfriend. And it just became this, like, weird movement of like, Latinos are so loved. And I'm like, yo, when did that happen? Because I don't remember growing up feeling that Latinos were loved on a grand scale, and that it was part of like pop culture, and that we were kind of like, you were seen for the first time. How do you balance, or how do you see that trend of like, some of it is appropriation, but how do you give Latinos love without appropriating parts of their culture? Like, how do you start to celebrate and appreciate Latinidad for those who aren't Latino? Like, where do you find that balance?
I think more than anything is about understanding how our culture engages with other cultures, right? I think mm-hmm. anytime that you try to say, well, this is my culture and it's better than yours, mm-hmm. Creates that separation. The problem is perception. Like, you know, my partner has a saying that he goes, the problem with American perception of Latinos is they put a sombrero on everything.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the way to say it. And when you look at film and television, you know, they make a Latin movie and it's like, la abuela con el arroz y de gambón, and it's like, the loud uncle with the car that's super shiny with the rims and pa 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 pa. It's like, I mean, that's part of my experience, but that's not my whole experience. I love sneakers. I love art. I talk like my friends do. I watch the films that they watch. I don't go home and be like, everything has to be Latino. I don't dress different because I'm Latino.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? I engage in culture the same way because it's American pop culture or urban culture, and I attach myself to that culture. And what I bring out of it that's different is, yeah, our slang is a little different. We talk a little different. I love going and dancing and those things, but so do other cultures. African culture loves dancing, and they're partying, and they're live, and they're food. So how do we relate to that culture without saying, hey, we're all Latinos, don't bring that. No, to the opposite. Let's do exactly the opposite. Let's say, hey, you know, how do we merge that? How do we make music with Afrobeat artists, which again, Balvin, first artist to do it, you know, like, how do we go make, you know, other kinds of music? How do we merge culture? And really that to me is the biggest thing is like, again, that's why I said, you got to create community unified, and then you got to create the ecosystem and say, we're all one, we're all humans at the end of the day. Right.
Yeah.
And where you were born, it really doesn't make you a better human. It's just, you're still a human. We have emotions. We live, we die. We all want love, like all the same things. And that's what connects us all, regardless of what we eat at home and what our culture is. Like, it doesn't matter. Those same stories is what you see in Hollywood, in Bollywood, in Asian films, in Colombian films, in Mexican films. The same storyline is just told through a different POV. So to me, the key in growing culture and really, you know, being proud of who we are, but changing the way we're perceived is, don't look at it as like, we are something better than you. No, we have all this to give. Let me go give it to you. Let me go share this music. Let me go share this food. Let's exchange interactions of our cultures and merge them together to create something beautiful called being a human. And that's where people miss the opportunity. And I think that that's really how we can do it, because it's, to your point, it's the perception has shifted, but it's shifted because of this. Because now, like now, betting on Latin music is good money. Now betting on quote unquote Latin talent is money. Why? Because corporate America sees that as the opportunity. The market has grown. The demo in the U.S. has grown. So now there's money. But it's, but other than that, it's not like, if it wasn't because there's an opportunity to make money, the perception doesn't change.
Yeah. And, you know, it's it is an interesting experience, because I think it's also happening within our own Latino community. Like, growing up, I grew up in San Diego, very big Mexican-American Chicano culture. And being Hondureña, Honduran, like, we had a very different culture. But there was so much that unified us too, whether it was the language, the food, the music. Like, we may not eat tacos, but we eat baleadas, and like, we can appreciate each other's food, but we still out here dancing salsa together. And so now I see that happening on a grander scale, and like platforms like what you're building, or even platforms like this, there's people appreciating the shared similarities, but also the differences. You know what I mean? Like, we make arroz con pollo, ustedes arroz con gandules, like, and we can appreciate that similarity at difference, and even in our experience. But I think it's hasn't always been that way within Latino culture. And I still think there's things that we're still fixing and working on, but that nationalism, like, no, los hondureños son mejores que los salvadoreños, and like, no, the Salvadorians are better than the Mexicans. Like, there was always that kind of narrative that we had, at least I had growing up.
Yes, it's a complex, we're a complex culture, because again, we have so many cultures and races in one. And so it's going to take some time, but I think it's all about that. It's showing the narrative. And also too, like, I think that the most of the times in media, what is projected is not the reflection of who we are as humans, right? It's just a part of it. Yeah, you might have the uncle. I might have the uncle who grew up in the drug business. Doesn't mean we're all drug dealers. You know what I'm saying? Like, you might have the uncle if you're Mexican who does dress a funny way in the boots. Like, but that doesn't mean you are. It doesn't mean your friends are doing that. Like, all my Mexican friends, for example, they dress stylish and they're cool and they're they like all the things that I like. All my Colombians, all my Salvadorian friends, all my Venezuelan friends, all my Puerto Rican friends, all my Dominican friends, like, they might talk a little different when we're all talking in our native tongue, but in the midst of the culture, we're all in the same culture, we're all in the same vibe. Even if you're from Spain, like, so it really, again, it's about unifying and understanding that at the end of the day, our taste level has risen. Our I think that's another big thing. Latin America, as territories, is now exposed to, one, a global audience, and two, a global commerce. So the kid in Colombia who did not know about hip hop and cool clothes and Billie Eilish, you know, 15 years ago, because they were just not exposed to it. There was no way that music was going to get there. There was no way that style was going to get there. So they were wearing, you know, Tommy Hilfiger and Ferragamo, are now exposed to it. So now they're wearing sneakers and, you know, I don't know, Off-White.
Yeah.
So the globalization of our economy and our commerce has also helped, I think, Latin culture expand and say, oh, wait, I can take that inspiration from hip hop and turn it into this. I now, my ability to even be free of sexuality and what I believe in has now been out because, hey, look, in the U.S., they accept those changes. They accept that community. So even though it's still kind of taboo over here, because historically that's been taboo, now I can be free because if Bad Bunny could do it or this person could do it, I can do it too. So all those things are going to continue to help change. But again, at the end, it's, we're humans. The connection is that we are humans. And that's what makes us, at the end of the day, you know, build community and build an ecosystem.
Yeah, we're all humans, different experiences, but we're all humans. I want to ask you, because you mentioned Plata, how did you get into business? Like, was this something that always came innately to you? Did you go out and like seek opportunities to study it? Like, I want to know how music and business became just the primary focuses for you.
So I was a creative. I've always been a creative. I was a music producer, but there was no managers for producers at the time I entered the music business. And so I started to realize that nobody believed in the things I believed in, right? Everybody wanted money, but nobody believed in the human part of it. Everybody had an idea of how to do things, but nobody wanted to be disruptive because nobody wanted to mess up the money. And I just felt that I was like, I have these ideas, and if nobody's going to believe in them, I'm going to believe in them. And I'm going to find a way to get them done. And that's what led me into music business. That's what's led me into the film and TV business over the past 2 years. My first two shows that I sold, I was on Zoom calls like this, Googling things because I didn't know what a showrunner was, a line, right? Like, I didn't know. But I had ideas that I can do film and TV. And no one, not even my agents, believed in me. So I went out and I figured it out myself. And now I'm in the film business. Now I run a film studio. Now I have multiple shows in production, multiple things in a high way. Now we're, you know, in a big way in that business. Why? Because I saw the opportunity. I saw something that I wanted to do and nobody believed in me. And so I think the entrepreneur in me always figured that my ideas and my creative and my purpose was needed in the world. And I had a reason to do it. And I think that's the biggest thing I tell people all the time is you have to find your why. You have to find the reason you get up in the morning. And it can never be money, because people who chase money, money continues to run away. But for me, and I think it's my theory about life, is humans, people. We all need each other. We're an ecosystem. And when you do something for the better of others, it's the golden rule. You know, you'll receive what you give. And so that's truly what has led me to that. And always wanting to change something, always wanting to do something better than someone else, because I saw a way of doing it, essentially led me to every business and led me to my success.
Was there a time that it didn't work out, or was there a time that it did work out? Like, tell me about you being disruptive and the results of it.
So I think there's times where it doesn't work out the way you want to because you don't have the expertise, or, you know, like certain things where I wanted to build maybe a marketing company and I just didn't have the expertise. And so it worked out. Like, you know, I built a marketing company 20 years ago. And for a while we had clients, we had everything. I met my partner through that. But then I didn't know how to sustain a business. I didn't know enough about business to run a business. And so one of the things I understood was that, you know, we're taught to focus so much on our weaknesses and to try to be a balanced human or a balanced athlete or a balanced businessman or businesswoman. And I just don't believe in that. I believe the universe, God made you great in what you're great at. So go be the best version of that and go find someone who's better than you in the other things. If you're not an organized person, yes, there's levels of things that you should organize that you can learn because you got to be a responsible human being. But if you're a creative and you can find a way to organize yourself a little, but you don't be the best organized in the world, because then you're going to take away from your creativity. Like, be creative and go find yourself someone who's a monster at that. And that's what it really started to change my dynamics in business. Like, the moment I started to realize, if I bring an incredible CFO, because even though I'm good and organized, numbers to me and how the business world uses numbers is not my forte. And so I brought someone who's, that's all they do. They dream and sleep numbers. and I Dream and Sleep Vision. And I was listening to Richard Branson from Virgin, and he's the same way. He's a creative. He focuses on building the brand of Virgin while he has incredible people who actually run the day-to-day operations. And so that's happened in my life, and I've seen that happen multiple times. I mean, I said, to be disruptive, what I'm doing in film and TV is the way it worked. But multiple things have failed in the past. You know, I've come up with cool marketing campaigns that don't do anything, you know, don't move the needle. But you tried it. You gave it a try. It is what it is.
You're just a hustler through and through.
Definitely. I am a hustler. I live that spirit of wanting to get something, building something. I get a rush. That's my high. I don't drink. I don't partake in any third party drugs or anything. So, for me, that's the rush. Like that's the anxiety. That's why in my personal life, I do a lot of things that are high intensity. I box and do mixed martial arts and do weapon training and tactical gun training, all those things, because I need that rush. I need that adrenaline.
You know, I love that you talked about being a creative, because I recently had a conversation around there's so much pressure on creatives to monetize and to make money and to, I mean, it's part of being first gen, it's part of being immigrant, Latino, like money is always on your mind. La plata is always on your mind. Like, how do I make money? How do I survive? You know, but I think we get so caught up in trying to make money instead of our creativity and just creating for the sake of creating. And I really do believe that we are all sent here with a purpose. And some of us are visionaries. Some of us are meant to be the curators of culture, the architects of culture. And then some of us are meant to be the CFOs that dream and think about money. I'm not one of those people. And I know that. I'm like, el dinero, it'll come to me. I just don't know how to do it yet, like in terms of creating that business structure. But it's cool. That's not my strength. But I think for any creative that's out there, it's so powerful that you're talking about playing into that strength and just creating, because I think it's so, again, so much pressure on like, how do I monetize this idea? How do I monetize this? How do I make money? Et cetera, et cetera.
And also too, even though you might have the ability to do a lot, don't do a lot, do less, and be more focused. I tell my team all the time, your brain is like air traffic control at an airport. There's 1,000 planes flying, which is 1,000 ideas. But the airline only makes money if the plane lands, takes out the people, loads it up with another group of people and sends it up. So pick the one that you're the closest to and land that plane. And what happens is we tend to get very discouraged when we do an idea, say a podcast. And so we do a podcast, we have an idea on how we want to talk. And then we start getting discouraged because it's not growing fast enough. It's not really generating. And I'm also good at dancing. So I'm going to go try to be a dancer while I do a podcast with it. No, stick to it. Figure out how to better it every day. Mental space is needed to be creative. So the more that you can niche your ideas, and again, find the resources around you to help you with that, the better you're going to be in accomplishing something in life. And then clearly understanding your why. It's like, why do I want this? Like what every single day, what would actually make today amazing for my podcast? Like, what is that goal that like, will reach? Is it subscribers? Is it whatever? And as you drive it and the reason for it, you start seeing that life has this incredible way of just putting your wheel into motion and then it goes. And success is like a rubber band. You pull, you pull, you pull. It seems so hard. It seems like you're never going to make it. But when it happens, it's like, poof, like this. From one day to the next, it seems like everything's just starting to go one opportunity. Before you know it, you're in a roll and you're off to the moon. And also too, success is what you want to make it. Success doesn't have to mean millions of dollars or awards. Success is you waking up and loving what you do every day, because tomorrow is not promised.
Period.
And that's the joy in life.
I want to quickly talk about Neon 16 because it's popping. Neon 16 is popping. I literally just ran into one of my friends who's managing this artist, and she's like talking about Neon 16 and how Neon 16 is a dream. And I was just like thinking in the back of my head, I love that a Latino owns like space is the dream. Like, I love that. I love that Neon 16 is at that caliber. So talk to me about how, like, what was the reason? What was like What was the reason, the purpose, the origin story behind creating Neon 16, and how did it happen with Thyne? Like, tell me that love story.
So at the time I was working at Rock. So I was EVP at Rock Nation, and I had just moved to Miami. I ran into him in a studio, and then he happened to become my neighbor with his girlfriend. And he just came over to my house one day. My house looks like an art gallery, as you see in the back. And he really just, like, we started finding a lot of common ground. And we started to hang out together. And it was then when I started to realize, oh, man, like, he needs help. You know, he needs a lot of help, a lot of structure. Really, I always tell people, I didn't make Thyne a great producer. Thyne was always a very talented producer. I gave Thyne a vision. And that vision is what we've been able to accomplish. So for me, when he happened to ask me to help, and I decided to leave Rock, it was really because I saw in this kid tons of potential to be incredibly massive while being an incredible human. And two, yeah, I saw what he was dealing with, because the industry just didn't respect producers at that time. And so I felt that together we can change the narrative of producers, take advantage of the opportunity that Latin music was in the baby stages, urban Latin music was in the early stages of revamping itself, and we can revamp it and do the things that nobody else was doing. And three, that I saw a human being in desperate need of help. And yeah, those three things really set the tone of, like, okay, let's go do this. I know how to build you. I have an idea. I have my first three steps on how we're going to build it. And essentially, when we created Neon, which we were in Japan, so that's where the name Neon came from, and 16, because both of us started our career at 16 years old. What really started to create the change was, I didn't come from the Latin world, so I didn't know that there was premios who went to premios lo nuestro, premios su música, premios, got more award shows here than they got people to fill. And I was like, well, I don't know any of that, but I know, you know, I know the NFL, I know the AMAs, I know the VMAs, I know Jimmy Fallon. And so we started a position Thyne doing things that nobody else was doing. And then I created an ecosystem around him between what we were doing in our events with what we were doing with projects like, you know, Kali Uchi. We were her first time that she had written with somebody else. And we had a vision, and they paid us nothing for that album. But out of that album came out Telepathy, and Kali's career became what it is today. And then I went, oh, Selena, I think we should do a Latin album. And we did a Latin album with Selena and got her first Grammy nomination. Then we were asked to do a marketing song, a remix of the SpongeBob song. And I was like, we're not going to do a remix. I want the whole soundtrack. If not, I'm not going to do it. And so those moves really set the tone for everything that started to happen, that created, again, that change of narrative and the change of perception, all together with our quality of music, with great talent, great brand identification, that became what Neon is today. And to your point, I think there's other music companies in Latin that are, you could say, are more financially successful or have a big artist. We don't have a Bad Bunny or a Karol G, but we have the biggest producer. And even with that, our brand is more meaningful than most, if not all, Latin companies, because we really have understood the most important part, which is our intention is creativity, impact, and human beings and people. Our intention is not money. We're successful because of those three intentions.
And being where you are today, I'm just curious. You started your career selling CDs, a pastor's kid, and like being where you are now, like, how do you stay grounded in who you are and where you came from while also continuing to create and dream and find success in your own way?
It comes from the purpose. It comes from the fact that I understand that I am no better than anybody else. That I have abilities and I think differently, yes. That I've been given opportunities and I've maximized them, yes. But at the core, you punch me and it's going to hurt. you break my heart in love and it's
going to
hurt.
Should we test it out? No, I'm just kidding.
You can. But you're going to have a hard time hitting me. No, but all that training is going to come into play right there. No, but to that point is funny. To that point is that I think I'm truly, and I don't say this, you know, to sound in a certain way emotional or anything. Like, my true purpose is human beings. And that understanding that and knowing that has allowed me to, one, enjoy what I do, right? No matter the hard times, I enjoy it because I know that I have purpose and that what I'm doing means something to my life and my legacy beyond the awards and the money and the cars and the watches and the whatever else this industry tries to sell you as happiness. And so that's my way of really staying grounded. And I believe in being a serving leader. You know, I tell people in my office, if as the CEO, I can take out the garbage, so can you.
Yeah.
Period. I will be here at 3 a.m. and we can afford for someone to decorate the office. But when we moved offices, I was here in 3 a.m. with the workers, taking nails off the doors. And everybody was like, what the hell are you doing? Like, you have people, you have paid people for that. No one else is here. Yeah, I take joy in that. I take joy in saying this is something we built. And I, with my own hands, I put work into here. And so it's hard to get there. But I think the number one thing is to always just always remember that human component and that we're an ecosystem. All the millions in the world, all the billions in the world, you still need love. You still need someone to come hug you and tell you that you're important. You know? And that's important. That's important. And so I would say that's what helps me stay grounded and focused. And also more than anything, to love what I do. I love what I do. I enjoy my life every single day to the fullest.
Yeah.
And that is a beautiful gift. That to me is success.
I love that. I have one last question for you. Where do you see Latin music going? Or what do you envision it to go?
I mean, I think it's gone where it needs to go, which is, I think it's at the center of pop culture. It's respected as a genre that is now global, not niche. And so where I see it going, it's just, you're going to continue to find amazing artists that no longer are bound by any musical genre, but really by just creativity. Right? We'll have our version of a Travis Scott and a version of Art Weekend, or our version of our Elton John. There's no boundaries. There's just like, you can push, you could be a super dope Latin, I don't know, trap DJ or whatever it is. To my point, we've now created this foundation where you just have to be talented and know how to storytell, and your music can get to the world. Doesn't matter how it sounds. And I love that. I love that because I think creatively, we're now part of music history at a level that, you know, I would say only pop and hip hop has really reached. And so that's amazing.
Shout out to you, to Neon 16, to the work you're doing, and to all the artists that are just popping, and to J Balvin. This was like a love letter to him.
I think so. I think I always tell him that he needs his flowers because he changed everything. Believe it or not, that one man's intention changed everything.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for being on this platform. Thank you for sharing all the tips, and also for reminding us that we're all humans and that we need to stay grounded in that purpose. I want to close this beautiful conversation with a brindis. I know you have water. I have my cafecito with me. I want to give you the space. Lex, what do you want to cheers to, and what do you want to manifest for our comunidad?
I think there's nothing better to cheers for than this precise moment. Like, this is success, being able to have a conversation with you, because we've had a conversation with intention, with purpose. So, you know, cheers to you, cheers to us being able to have this hour of our time that the universe moved 1,000,000,000 things so it could happen for a reason. So cheers to this moment, cheers to our conversation. And I manifest that our community unites itself, that our community really finds the true meaning of humanity beyond money, beyond ego, beyond last name, and understands that together we could do amazing, incredible things.
Yes. So cheers. Shout out, period. Salud. Thank you, Lex. Thank you for the time. Thank you. Thank you for always showing love on this podcast, y'all. I don't know what I'd do without you. And I hope you love this episode. I hope you walk away smiling every single time you listen to an episode. And just thank you from the bottom of my heart. I'm going to see y'all next week for more Cafecito en Chisme. For all Hella Latino updates, follow Hella Latino Podcast on Instagram and find me on LinkedIn. Those are my two main channels. But for more links and information, go to my website, odalisjasmine.com. Con muchísimo amor, tu amiga hondureña. Abrazos.